My guest, Ahmed Rashid, is a Pakistani journalist who has been covering Afghanistan for 20 years. He's the author of Taliban, Militant Islam, Oil, and Fundamentalism in Central Asia. In addition to writing for the Pakistani press, he's the Central Asia correspondent for the Far Eastern Economic Review and the Daily Telegraph of London. This morning, we called him in Lahore, Pakistan, and asked him first for his interpretation of the videotape released yesterday by the Bin Laden Organization, in which a spokesperson promised that the storm of airplanes will not stop and said, America must know that the battle will not leave its land until America leaves our land, until it stops supporting Israel, until it stops the blockade against Iraq.
Well, it's really a call to war. I mean, I think, you know, he's come out of his hiding, as it were. He's come out of his secrecy and the veils that surrounded him, and he's calling for a jihad against the West and against the Muslim regime, such as the Saudi Arabia's regime, which he considers as being as infidel as the West. And it really is a call which is supposed to kind of rouse the passions of Muslims around the world and to take up arms.
I think the intention also is probably to terrify Americans.
Oh, certainly. I mean, you know, he's certainly done that, I think. And, you know, he's threatening more terrorist strikes. Now we've heard today that, in fact, he has the Taliban have given him full freedom. They had said earlier that they had controlled his movements, which was very doubtful anyway. But the Taliban have now totally committed themselves to his call for a jihad.
You're speaking to us from Lahore. What's the popular reaction to that tape that you've seen so far?
Well, Pakistan is very polarized. I mean, there is a minority support for Bin Laden, for the Taliban. People have been out in the streets protesting the American bombing of Afghanistan, criticizing the present regime. The vast majority of people, I think, are extremely upset with the Americans, but they're not in support of the Taliban, and they're not willing to go out in the streets, certainly, to demonstrate in favor of either the Taliban or Bin Laden. There is a lot of anti-American feeling, but generally it's not being translated into support for the Taliban, except for the religious fundamentalists, people who attend the mosques of these religious parties or study at their schools. So what you have is a kind of mullah student kind of demonstrations going on in a lot of cities. But these are small. The general public has generally not joined them.
I'm wondering how Muslims who aren't extremists, and that's the majority of Muslims, how they're reacting where you are in Pakistan to the call for Muslims for all Muslims to participate in jihad. The spokesperson from Al-Qaeda said yesterday, jihad is the religious duty of every Muslim. And he seemed to be calling on every Muslim to do what they can to attack America.
Well, I think, you know, many sensible Islamic leaders and scholars have pointed out that, you know, not every Tom, Dick and Harry can stand up and give a fatwa, that is an Islamic ruling, nor can anyone just stand up and declare jihad. There's a means and a ways to do this. And for example, I mean, jihad in the past, during the Crusades, in the 13th, 14th century, was declared only after a meeting of all the Islamic scholars of that country or region, which represented all the sects of Sunni Islam. Bin Laden is neither a scholar nor is he a preacher, nor does he have any kind of religious education as such. And of course, the other big issue is, you know, what is jihad? And the Prophet Muhammad has described jihad in two ways. The greater jihad is the struggle of the self to be a good Muslim, to practice Islam fully. The lesser jihad is the jihad where you take up arms against foreigners who may have invaded your country. The Prophet differentiated between these two jihads, and the fact remains that the greater jihad is a struggle within yourself.
I've been hearing a lot of people saying, why aren't Muslims who are opposed to Bin Laden taking a more forceful stand against him and making sure that Islam isn't co-opted by his extremism? What are your thoughts on that and your observations?
Well, I generally speaking, I would tend to agree with you. You know, I think The problem has been that many of the Islamic regimes around the world are either authoritarian or dictatorial. They have their own problems with their people. Now, what, of course, bin Laden is doing is trying to appeal to the people directly and to overthrow, and that the people should mobilize and overthrow their regime. The problem in the Islamic world is twofold. I mean, you know, you have a terrorist problem, but you also have a problem of these regimes who, in many ways, have not seen the light, as it were, after the end of the Cold War in 1991, and gone in for economic development and democracy and greater freedoms and press freedom and issues like that. And these are not, you know, I mean, Muslims don't consider this as a so-called Western agenda. I mean, this is an agenda of the world. It's the agenda of, if you like, globalization, which cuts across, you know, religions and cultures. And many of these regimes really don't have their populations alongside them, and that is the problem.
Do you think the Musharraf presidency is in trouble?
Well, he, you know, Musharraf certainly, this is a military regime, and he's heading it, and it's certainly facing very severe problems because of this acute polarization in Pakistan. So far, I will say, despite the demonstrations and the pictures you've probably seen on television, he is holding the line. The demonstrations have been violent, but they've been very small by Pakistani standards. You've had several thousand people in the streets. You haven't had hundreds of thousands of people in the streets as yet. And he has reshuffled his army top command. He's got rid of some generals who were not supporting his alliance with the United States and the West. So he is in a stronger position. But, of course, it still remains very unpredictable, and that all depends on the nature of the war in Afghanistan. We don't know how long this campaign is going to last. What, you know, is Pakistan going to get inundated with 1 million, 2 million refugees? What happens, you know, inside the country? Will the Islamic parties actually succeed in bringing out the general public, which has so far refused to come out into the streets? So all these questions are very much there.
How would you describe the Musharraf presidency? I mean, he seized power in a military coup. Would you consider him a fairly democratic leader in terms of human rights and freedoms for the people in Pakistan, or would you consider him more dictatorial in that regard?
Well, this is a military regime, but martial law has not been declared. Now, we don't have the constitution has been abrogated for the time being. There's no parliament, and there's a great restrictions on political activity. But at the same time, there are pluses in the sense he hasn't interfered with the media. The media is as free as it was, you know, under democratic regime. And he hasn't much interfered with human rights and the legal system. So it's a mixed bag, basically, of but clearly, you know, with this present threat and the war going on next door, there are going to, and there have been already, you know, many arrests of politicians, Islamic leaders who've been protesting. You know, he has toughened up his act a lot.
Pakistan is a nuclear power. Are you worried about the possibility of nuclear weapons getting into the hands of extremists?
I don't think that that is a real problem. I know it's been played up a lot in the West. But, you know, the nuclear program here has always been very tightly controlled by the army. This is a very hierarchical army under the, you know, it's been trained by the British and the Americans. The chief is the chief, you know, and if he reshuffles the generals, there's, you know, there may people, you know, other junior officers may be upset, but there's not a peep out of them. This is not an army which has had, you know, coups within from junior officers and things like that. So I think, you know, clearly the nuclear program has been kept under tight lock and key by the military. And what we have seen, of course, since September the 11th is much greater cooperation from the United States. In fact, there have been reports that the U.S. has actually supplied now for the first time a mechanism, safety mechanisms for Pakistan's nuclear program. The U.S. was unable to do this in the past because there were U.S. sanctions against Pakistan. But these sanctions have now been lifted, and you know, the U.S. is also involved now in securing the nuclear program. This information has not been made public by either side because it's a kind of embarrassment in a way. But I think it kind of reassures at least the U.S. administration.
I think that the way what's happening now is being framed is that you're either for the United States and the coalition in the war against terrorism, or you're for bin Laden and the terrorists. From what you're saying, it really sounds like there's a lot of people who aren't for either. They oppose the bombing, and at the same time, they oppose bin Laden. Is that group that isn't happy with the United States or bin Laden being vocal in any way in expressing a third way?
Well, I mean, as in the United States, I think, you know, they are expressing indignation at the bombing, and they are the sort of incubators of a peace movement here, if you like. But it's a mixed bag in the sense that they're not particularly clear about how to deal with terrorism. They know they don't like the bombing of Afghanistan by the Americans and the civilian casualties that this is almost certain to create. But, you know, they are trying to be neutral, but this is a very difficult issue to be neutral about. The kind of polarization that you talked about was actually set by the Bush administration on the very first day when they told, President Bush told the world that either you're with us or against us. Now, what we've seen in the Muslim world, of course, in subsequent weeks has been many countries taking this neutral stance. Iran has condemned the terrorism, but has refused to allow, back the American attack on Afghanistan. Many of the Arab regimes are taking a similar kind of position. They haven't given bases to the Americans. Even the Saudis, which is a very Saudi Arabia, which is a very close ally of the United States, has not allowed its command centers, which were built by the Americans, to be actually used by the Americans. Even though the American troops, you know, defended Saudi Arabia against Iraq in the Gulf War in 1991. So you do have now many Islamic countries taking, if you like, a kind of semi-neutral position. They have condemned terrorism, and they said that bin Laden has to give himself up, but they have not backed, if you like, the bombing of Afghanistan.
I'm wondering if you're hearing anything that you're finding disturbing, either in the streets or in the press, myths or conspiracy theories.
Well, yes. There have been incredible conspiracy theories in the local press here and in the Arab world about the bombings, that the World Trade Center was bombed by the Israeli intelligence, that 4,000 Jews in New York did not go to work that day because they had somehow been tipped off. So there were no Jewish casualties amongst the dead and wounded in the World Trade Center. That, you know, I mean, these are conspiracies that have done the rounds, and you know, I mean, they fit some of them are completely outrageous, of course they all are, and they've been, you know, widely condemned in other newspapers. So there is a kind of, you know, rush to judgment by many people and by the media here who perhaps are sympathetic to the horrible murders of so many people in New York and Washington, but cannot possibly believe or want to believe that a Muslim could have carried that out.
Well, do you think the tapes that the bin Laden organization has released in the past few days might convince skeptics that it really was possible for Muslims to have organized those attacks?
I think it's done two things. It has convinced many skeptics, because now, if you like, bin Laden is out of the closet, and we know exactly where he stands, and this denying, you know, he denies everything. In the last 10 years, he's denied everything. But now there's no question of being able to deny it. But on the other hand, he's also raised many issues which go to the heart of Muslim feeling. He's talked about the Palestinian issue, and he's talked about Iraq and the children of Iraq. Now, you know, many of these issues, if you minus the threat to the U.S. and the fact that he's willing to carry out more terrorist bombings, many of these issues, of the other issues he talks about, go to the heart of many Muslim feelings. So, you know, it's been, I think, in the Muslim world, there's been a, you know, mixed reaction to what he said.
My guest is Ahmed Rashid, a Pakistani journalist and the author of a book about the Taliban. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to the interview I recorded earlier today with Pakistani journalist Ahmed Rashid. He writes for the Pakistani Press and for the Daily Telegraph of London. We called him in Lahore. You've written a very good book about the Taliban. If the Taliban fall as a result of the military actions there that the United States has taken, what are the possibilities afterwards?
Well, I am very hopeful that the Afghan factions are going to get together and be able to set up a sort of an interim government which will include all the factions and all the ethnic groups. Now, this is a very long shot. It's been, you know, many people have tried to do this over the last 10 years of civil war since the Soviets left, and they haven't succeeded. But I think, you know, there are several factors now which are coming into play which could make this possible. The first is that there's total exhaustion by the population. And the faction chiefs know that, you know, they if they go in for another power-grabbing, land-grabbing kind of adventure, they're not going to get supporters to fight for them. They're not going to get the population with them. The other issue is that there's a chronic humanitarian crisis. Most Afghans are presently starving, you know, the faction leaders know that, I mean, the country has completely been, you know, driven down into kind of minus zero, if you like. So, you know, that is, you know, and it's a crisis that everyone sees, all the Afghans see that, and they all need peace. And what has been encouraging is that all the anti-Taliban factions, you know, are getting together and are calling for a peaceful settlement at the end of the war.
Any final thoughts you want to leave us with?
Well, I think, you know, the most important thing is, I think, you know, whether it's the peace movement, whether it is people in the United States who are supporting the present war in Afghanistan, I think the most important thing is to get Americans to be interested in this issue and to convince the ordinary American public and congressmen and legislators and people who really don't know very much about this part of the world that the U.S. has to remain engaged in this region once the war is over. It has to do certain things, help rebuild Afghanistan. It has to help mediate between India and Pakistan over Kashmir. But above all, it has to address the issue of the Middle East in a more a fair way. It cannot just be seen as a partner of Israel, as many Muslims see the United States as a partner of Israel in crushing the Palestinians. The Middle East problem is the core of the Muslim anger at the moment, and unless this is addressed in a more fair and equitable way, this Muslim anger against the United States, which will take many forms, I mean, not just terrorism, it will take many forms, but it will continue. And the U.S., you know, has to address the Middle East issue to be ensure that it can defuse this anger.
The impression I get is that the tone might be shifting now to a peace in the Middle East, from that to we don't want the state of Israel. You know, Israel shouldn't exist at all. That sentiment is getting more extreme against Israel.
Well, certainly. I mean, you know, I think you know, the fact you've had an uprising in the Palestinian territories for so many years, the fact that there's been such an enormous radicalization, both of the Palestinians and the Israelis. I mean, the extremist Israelis now are more in number than ever before. There is a deep, deep polarization and radicalization on both sides of the divide, and it's going to need, again, I think, you know, international pressure and international engagement to try and defuse this.
Ahmed Rashid is a Pakistani journalist and the author of Taliban, Militant Islam, Oil, and Fundamentalism in Central Asia. He spoke to us earlier today from Lahore.